So, first of all, in Iran, Iran's Revolutionary Guard, in a report just out on the Associated Press, says it threatens to crush any further opposition protests in Tehran. We've been monitoring protests and the news around the world as people attempt to figure out what's going on in Iran, and we want you to let us know what your sources are at 877-8-MY-TAKE or MyTake at thetakeaway.org. But Iran's news and Iran's profile has kept the focus away from other conflict zones, and the president of the Southern Russian Republic of Ingushetia has been severely wounded in a suicide bomb attack. Latest reports say a car loaded with explosives rammed the president's car as he was driving to work. Ingushetia, of course, is in the Caucasus region where Georgia is, other places that have been the subject of conflict over many, many years. To help us put this into perspective, we're joined by the BBC World Service's Stephen Eake. He joins us from London. Stephen, first of all, thanks for being with us.
You're more than welcome. Well, Ingushetia is a very troubled part of Russia, as you were just saying there in your introduction. Fairly small republic, the borders Chechnya, which is, of course, a place that many more people are familiar with. But Ingushetia is now one of the most troubled parts of Russia, with a conflict that the Russian government itself admits is very close to civil war.
And let's get people up to speed on the details here. The president, who was severely wounded, who actually may not survive this attack, is Yunus Bekyevkorov. And is he associated with a particular ethnicity that is likely to inflame tensions within Ingushetia and other places around Russia?
Well, Mr. Yevkurov was actually put in place by the Kremlin, by President Medvedev last autumn, or last fall, as our listeners would say. And he was a replacement for the previous leader, Mr. Zyazikov, who was imposed by Vladimir Putin, the previous Russian president. Mr. Zyazikov was deeply unpopular. He was seen as personally responsible for what is a very harsh campaign, or what had been a very harsh campaign, using lots of force against these various armed groups. The Kremlin hoped that Mr. Yevkurov would be seen as a compromise figure who would be perhaps more understanding in trying to deal with the social conditions that lead to this rampant gangsterism and inter-clan fighting. As we've seen, unfortunately, Mr. Yevkurov's tenure of office hasn't actually resulted in peace. The situation is arguably getting worse. And I was watching Russian television just a couple of weeks ago when President Medvedev himself flew down to Ingushetia to hold a meeting. And he was very candid about the types of difficulties, saying, look, there's no immediate solution to this. Whoever's in charge, it's going to be difficult. We're not talking in Ingushetia about a conflict between ethnic groups. We're talking about a situation in which there are Islamist groups, but there are also gangsters. There are conflicts between various clans. There is massive corruption, a barely functioning judicial or police system, poverty and unemployment. Perhaps the worst mix you could have when you're trying to deal with a guerrilla conflict.
And all left over from the original breakup of the Soviet Union, and none of those wounds have been healed in any sense. We saw how the situation in Georgia, a very different conflict with a very different dynamic, really caused a crisis in the Kremlin a year ago. Is there any chance that circumstances would force Medvedev or Putin to call for some sort of intervention, a greater role by Moscow, some attempt to establish martial law or something like that in Ingushetia?
Well, the ironic thing is that if we look across the border from Ingushetia to Chechnya, where there were two wars, and sometimes we actually forget just how bloody and how many people died during those wars. You're talking about many, many tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people were killed. The situation in Chechnya is now, from Moscow's perspective, resolved. It says the anti-terrorist operation, as it calls it, there has ended, and it's actually possible to travel more or less freely to Chechnya. What appears to have happened, however, in Ingushetia, which lies to the west of Chechnya, and in another republic that we don't talk about very often at all, called Dagestan, which lies to the east on the edge of the Caspian Sea, there are situations where the authorities have basically lost control. Now, whether Moscow would be willing to go down the Chechen route, if you like, of all-out warfare, I think is very doubtful. They learned a lot of lessons, very salutary lessons, both in terms of international condemnation and just how much it cost in human life and financial terms to use that approach. The Russians have tried to have an intelligence-focused approach, but human rights groups say has often been accompanied by some pretty serious abuses.
Mm-hmm. BBC World Service's Stephen Eake from our partners, the BBC in London. Thanks so much for joining us. At the very least, folks, get out a map. Take a look at a very broad conflict zone from Ingushetia to Dagestan all the way to Chechnya. Certainly some signs that instability may be proliferating in that region, challenging in some sense the claims of stability of the Russian government. So we're also keeping up with the latest on Iran. When you do it, there's the BBC and the New York Times and us, The Takeaway. But news about Iran is also coming from other sources. There's Twitter, Facebook, other places. Bob emails us. I time my commute to catch the first 25, 30 minutes of your show, but my morning is very incomplete until I'm assured by Femi that 17 minutes past the hour has come again. Then I use my BBC site as my full source, usually upon logging in at work and having my first coffee. How do you assemble your front page? 877-8-MY-TAKE, or you can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org. And when you're looking at the news on TV or in photos, here's your takeaway.
In every city that you see people are demonstrating, they've got these English placards because they want not only to show to themselves that they are different class, but also they want the world to know about them and what is happening to them.
Is history repeating itself in Iran? 1979 was the Islamic Revolution. What's going on today? Bakr Moin, former head of the BBC's Persian Language Service, was putting it in context. He grew up in Iran, author of the book Khomeini, Life of the Ayatollah. You can listen to our interview with him by going to our podcast at iTunes or thetakeaway.org. While you're there, you can catch more of the Gregory brothers as they auto-tune the news. You can listen to them auto-tune The Takeaway. And also, Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen has a blog post and continuing coverage all day on the very soggy U.S. Open. I'm John Huckenberry. This is The Takeaway.